Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the fire.
Well, good morning from the sunny Sunshine Coast in Queensland, Australia. Today, I'm going to be talking to you about, once again, Mind Your Feet. So this is Helen Ryan with the Mind Your Feet program. Today, I wanted to introduce the concept of mindfulness, which is the basis of what our program is all about, Mind Your Feet. Now, mindfulness is a very talked about, very topical subject at the moment, but it's one that's often widely misunderstood because it has all sorts of different connotations. I first came across it many years ago while I was working in Western Australia, and I was looking for something that would make some sort of change to the way that my life was running because I was conscious that things just weren't happening. So for me, I came across it through philosophy, and that was a fantastic introduction to the power of something, which I must admit when I first was made aware of it, I dismissed as how could that possibly work. So the concept of mindfulness works on the basis that if we can still our body, then the mind has to follow. And once we can still the mind, we're in a position where we can actually start to work and focus with clarity and from a position of stillness. Now, today's guest, and she's just coming online now, is welcome, Lorraine.
Hello.
Hello, Lorraine. So I'm introducing Lorraine Enright, who is a coach with Certitude Life Coaching here, also on the Sunshine Coast. Welcome, Lorraine, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you really clearly. Hello? Thank you.
Oh.
We can hear you.
Thank you, Helen, for inviting me.
That's quite all right. So, Lorraine, today's topic is about mindfulness. And I'll just explain to our listeners that mindfulness has lots of different meanings and lots of different connotations for people. So today I've chosen to talk to Lorraine about her definition of mindfulness. We first met a couple of years ago, and I can remember at the time I was still trying to search for what my passion and my purpose in life were, and I came across Lorraine, and one of the things that first impressed me, Lorraine, was your amazing stillness. And
Thank you.
That's quite okay. So what I wanted to do today is explore mindfulness in the context that you've come to know it, and then we're going to go on a little further and talk about mindfulness in the context of managing situations where there's mental illness in the family. So listeners, this is going to be quite a challenging conversation for some of you, because I think what we're going to be doing is introducing concepts that we don't always have to race off for a pill. We can actually use what I call the still pill, which is something within us, our ability to tap into our very true selves and to be very still as a way of helping us to work with and deal with all sorts of complexities that life chooses to throw us. Now, if you would like to call into the show at any time, the dial-in number is 646-716-7979. And if you wanted to come in with a chat question, then please feel free to do so. So, Lorraine, let's get started, shall we? Shall we first talk about how you define mindfulness? Would that be okay?
Yes, Helen. Well, yeah, that would be fine. For me, mindfulness is very much being in the present moment and how we react, be internally or externally, to our events and situations in life. It's a very sort of simple task to do, but complex in the same way of being able to be in that present moment and actually taking the time to go through and listen to it, those thoughts that we're having and feel those feelings that are in our body and being aware of where that reaction may be happening in our body.
Yes, because it's about observing the reaction rather than hopping into it as much as we would normally do if we're not really living in the moment, isn't it?
Yes.
And by that I mean it's about, you know, we learn to be aware of that feeling without needing to say, I am feeling this. It's there is fear, there's anger, there's sadness. And it's also about being able to observe it in a way that you can do something about it then.
It's really acknowledging it. Unfortunately, in today's society, because we are so busy, we get these moments where we tend to bury things and we're not really acknowledging and giving that recognition of, that's okay. That's okay for me to feel that or be in that moment. And then when you become aware of that and you have that mindfulness about that, things start to change. Things start to what I say is actually goes through your body opposed to into your body.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually, because it does just, excuse me, I've got a real frog in my throat today, but it does allow the moment passes through and then we can go on and actually start to live in the moment as it is now rather than with that feeling, for example, hanging around inside our bodies. So yes. You mentioned before that it's simple and it's at one point simple and another way complex. Can you elaborate on that for me?
Well, to me, it's a simple task in the context of when we stop and actually become aware of it and acknowledge it. But because as I mentioned before, the way we are with society, we have so many pressures to do with our home and our finances and all sorts of things around us, that we don't take that moment. And that's where I mean it's a bit difficult and it's a challenging task because you need to be consciously aware of doing that.
Yes, and what I've found for me personally, and particularly when I first was aware of this, is that it would be the more complex or more challenging a situation was, the more likely I was to completely forget all about being mindful.
Mm. Yes.
So
the busier the more we tend to switch to a mode, and therefore that's when we start to bury the things inside us. That's when we start to, and it's a yucky word as in saying festering, but we do, you know, we know people, or well, I have known people in the past that have seemed very healthy, very active, they're looking after themselves, but they have then come, you know, and found out that there's something wrong within them. You know, they're not well, and that's purely for, in my belief, is not connecting with our body, with what's happening, and not being mindful.
So, tell me, how did you first come across mindfulness?
Oh, I came across it many years ago, actually. It's something I've been passionate about. I'm certainly passionate about helping people and I'm really focused in looking at mental health and depression with having 53 years living alongside mental health. It's very close to my heart. And I heard of a course that was happening, a situation where, and so I went and went to that course. It was 8 weeks at that time of being able to understand and connect and learn about it. And the interesting part of the timing was that just towards the end of doing that program, my father-in-law passed away. So I found it very useful in the timing for me at that time to be able to go through that very, you know, sensitive time in my life. And my father then passed away 3 months after that unexpectedly. So it really was a blessing for me to have come across mindfulness and to start using those techniques.
So what was the thing that you first realized was really useful in the context of dealing with something like grief?
It was the part of knowing it was okay and I was okay, that grief is different for many people. We all go through it. Yes, we're all in one, but it's a different journey for everyone else. And for me, I've found it very comforting and helping me to connect, where I was able to go, that's okay for me to feel like that. How do I feel? Where is that feeling going? What's happening? And it was a blessing, as I said, a true blessing.
Mm-hmm. So was that what led you then to apply it to different other parts of your life, or did you start to notice a change in your life straight away?
I would say that I noticed a change immediately because of the fact that I was starting to listen to my body mm-hmm. and my mind. It's something that I've probably taken a bit for granted in time. I've always had a connection to wanting to know more, learning and having different skills where I can support and guide and help people through their life. But for me, the journey was that's what I was ready and needed to have more experience on to get me through that process to that time of my life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell us a little bit, if you would, about your experience living with somebody with a mental illness. Because from what I understand, it was your mum who you were
yes.
having to live with while she was going through her challenges.
Oh, Helen, there's so many things that I can tell you. It's truly a roller coaster of a journey. It was interesting over time to see and really get to know my mother and understand that, yes, you know, there were mental health issues, but deep inside was, you know, a person just like you, me, everyone else that's talented and gifted and special and strong. And unfortunately, society, we tar people with that brush, we paint them, and there is a stigma, and they get pushed aside, they don't get to listen. It was learning to understand that what was the mental illness that was speaking, that, you know, that she may have been having a story or telling me something about, to who was this beautiful person, who was this woman telling me truly part of her life when she was younger, that was true. And That was such a journey. I will say it was, in through my childhood, it was a very turbulent life. As I said, there's many things that I could and many stories I have. But it was a true blessing to have and have my mother, like my mother, you know, that was there. I thanked her over and over again for being my mum and choosing to have me as a child, because she really taught me a lot and really helped me to understand this was my passion and purpose.
And that's fantastic. So am I allowed to ask, I don't like the labels that go with mental illness, but are we allowed to talk about what mental illness she was having to deal with on a daily basis?
Well, her mental illness was diagnosed as schizophrenia originally. When she because I have two brothers, unfortunately at that time postnatal depression wasn't recognised very well either, and mm-hmm. she was going through, I believe, postnatal depression. So my father took her to her doctor and they said, well, what will fix her is have another child. And unfortunately, yeah. that didn't fix the situation. It made it worse. And when I was six months old, my mother attempted to take her life. And, yeah, there was you know, thankfully, you know, in her heart, she knew that I was special. I was her daughter. I was her child, and I was in another room, and that's very thankful, because if I had been by her side or close by, I wouldn't be here today. But yeah, the turmoil, the times where she was asking for help and things, you know, something was happening, and because of the label of, you know, having a mental illness and having schizophrenia, she wasn't believed, and that was so frustrating for her. That happened so often.
And that is something that I hear on a regular basis with people who suffer from any kind of challenges to do with how they cope in the world. So that might be anxiety or panic. It might be ADHD, ADD, schizophrenia, bipolar. That there's a common theme when you speak to people that if they choose to go the medication path, it takes an edge off their life. And that also, because of the label, they're also then discounted for their, you know, for their very valuable contribution that they can make. And as you say with your mum, you know, she was a resilient and gifted person. And the fact that she continued to show up is, you know, a big thing when you're dealing with the various things that are going on at both an emotional and a physical level. So tell me, when you started working with your mindfulness, did you notice that it also helped her?
Yes, I do. I do recall there were times where when I would speak to her and I'd ask her to come back to where we are right now and what was happening right now and not to, you know, try and jump ahead with everything that was going on. And you could, I could see like this peaceful part that would come in, and she'd take a lovely deep sigh and, yeah, be accepting of that's okay, I'm okay, I'm here right now. And things are fine right now. And it really did help her through. It really did help her to take those moments. Unfortunately for my mother, because of so much that had happened in the past with treatments and medication, there was a huge roller coaster ride for her. There was a lot of things that had happened that had a big impact on her and future and down the track.
So you then chose to incorporate mindfulness into the work that you do. I was explaining to the listeners before you came online that mindfulness is about stilling the body, and that once we still the body, the mind must follow. Under quantum physics, the mind must actually follow. What's your particular technique for achieving a place of being in the present, right here, right now?
Well, my first thing that I do is when I take that moment, I go straight into the core, my gut, what is called the solar plex. That to me is where everything tends to stem from, and where we really connect to who we are and our worth. And then when I've taken that moment to do that, or I've asked my clients to do that, then I'll go through the process of finding out where a certain pain is or how their reaction is, and bringing it into the moment of what are they feeling, what is happening, where do they think that's come from, and becoming really stilled. And it's amazing on when we come into that place, we bring ourselves to that place, then the answers and things just start to unfold, and the tension and the mind chatter start to align and become peace. We become at peace inside within ourselves.
It is spectacular, isn't it? And my particular technique, and the reason I've called my show and my book Mind Your Feet, is that my technique is to first of all to get people to have their shoes off, and possibly also their socks if they will, and really just connect to their feet. And it's a similar kind of concept in that with the focus on one part of the body or even on one sense. So it can be done with, you know, the air on the face and hands, or just feeling our body sitting in a chair, that the attention goes straight to that stillness. And even if for just a very short period of time, you can actually see the person be still. And it's a really amazing experience, isn't it, when we can, as the coach or the observer of this, see that person just going into a moment where everything is just completely right here.
Yes, I agree. To be able to feel, and you can not only see it in that face, you can sense and feel that energy of where they are then at peace of where they are now, and that everything around them is not important at the moment. It's right who they are, where they are, and what's good for them. And that peaceful state is so, it's such a healthy, it rejuvenates. It starts to rejuvenate, you know, our cells, our organs. It's such a powerful thing, such a powerful technique.
It is. It's amazing. I mean, as I said earlier, when I first heard about it, I discounted it, and which I'm very ashamed to say now, because it's become an integral part of my life. And then I had a particular event occur, and it was associated with illness of a friend, and I had a similar situation where being present and using mindfulness allowed me to, it was in fact a very sudden death of a very close friend. It took away that, there was acknowledgement that there was still grieving and there was still a deep, deep sadness, but underneath it all was an understanding that this was absolutely how it was meant to be, and also that person was always going to be with me, because they were always going to have, you know, the experiences shared would always be there for me. So that was a real wake-up call for me to actually start taking more notice and using mindfulness on a day-to-day basis. And so in my particular case, I've adopted the approach of 5 minutes twice a day, and then having regular pauses before I start a new activity during the course of the day. And I found that is also really energizing. Is that something that you've also noticed?
Yes, I definitely have noticed that. Something that I always suggest to my clients is, you know, depending on what's happening, take that time. If you're able to go outdoors somewhere, sit outdoors. If not, go to the toilet and sit at the toilet, but take that break. Take that time where you are mindful of what's happening, where you are, what's happening in your body. And it creates such a clarity and a moment of rejuvenation to be able to take that next step.
It does. Now, you and I, when we were talking about you and you were kindly agreeing to be my guest for this show, we were talking about my concept of the still pill, and we were talking about how, and I was saying at the time that for me the still pill, or using mindfulness, is a wonderful way to allow the body to be in the moment, for one thing, but how it's particularly of value for people who are facing either mental health issues, or who are coping with people around them who are coping with mental health issues. And I know that you were mentioning that you've got some really interesting statistics, and I was hoping you might share those with us.
Well, what I've noticed, because I'm very much into looking at the World Happiness Reports and what where we are in our lives and what's happening with people, and I've just noticed that, or I've read that there's an interesting part where they have developed a smartphone app and they were wanting to experience and find what people were going through at certain times. And so what they had done, they had over 2,000 individuals around the age of 34 be able to tap into this, and then what they noticed is that when their mind would start to wander, that 47% of that time would go to negative and unhappy thoughts.
And that's an awful lot of negativity.
That's a lot. That's astounding that that was the first, poor place of where our mind would go when it started to wander, when we lost that mindfulness of being in the moment and what was happening, that's where we drift off, and 47%. So I find that such quite a outstanding figure, like percent.
It is, because if we run that out across the population, you know, that's a lot of people who are being very unhappy. And if the majority of those people are not in the present moment, that means that the majority of them are also thinking negative thoughts all the time.
Well, something that's quite interesting when it comes to depression and anxiety, in Australia, for example, 20% of Australians will suffer from the effects of mental illness in some form throughout their life. And in that 20%, that creates, you know, a 1 in 5. But in the World Happiness Report of 2013, they did, the world cases. Now, this is so phenomenal and outstanding numbers. In world cases, and these are ones that are just actually, you know, registered and that they've been able to follow, there is 404 million cases of depression. And there are 272 million cases of anxiety. Now, for the listeners to get their head around that and the bearings on that, that is the population of the United States and South America combined.
That's scary, isn't it?
That's huge.
Yeah. That's just... And the thing that comes from that combination of depression and anxiety means that we've got a huge population of people walking around unable to function and step into their purpose in life.
That's... Yes. Yes, Helen, that's so true.
Yeah.
Talking about the mindfulness is, as I said, living alongside mental illness for 53 years, I have suffered depression myself, without a doubt. And I've had people and dear friends come to me and say at times, look, Lorraine, there's nothing to be ashamed of to go to the doctor and see what medication. And I agree with that. There are certain levels of mental health that require medication. There may be a chemical imbalance, but there are other ways as well, and mindfulness is one of them, and I am living proof of that.
Yes, I get that too. I have had an interesting example of that a couple of years ago when I lost a close relative, and her daughter was naturally grieving because it was very sad to be losing her mum. And she went to the doctor because she was feeling completely overwhelmed by the sadness and grief, and was offered antidepressants. And she rang me and she said, well, I'm not sure, something tells me it wouldn't be a good idea to take these. And because I can't help myself, and I'm fairly opinionated, and listeners, you will get to hear that on a regular basis, I suggested that instead of taking the antidepressant, it might be a good idea to keep that prescription somewhere where she didn't need to find it again, and instead practice some mindfulness, practice being in the moment, and acknowledge and recognise that in a situation such as a passing, yes, there would be sadness and grief. And there is an old biblical saying, this too shall pass. And I think in this particular instance, one of the things to recognise was that it did pass. And after a period of time, in this particular case, she was able to recognise that it was the time for her mum to make the transition to the next place. And that equally that process of grieving would become a sadness, and then it became and has become a series of beautiful, fond memories. But it wasn't a depression as such. It was a sadness, an overwhelming sadness, yes, but it wasn't actually a chemical depression. And to have gone down the path of an antidepressant could well have been a really difficult path to follow.
Well, that going down that path gives us another challenge. Gives people, you know, like there's challenges with having that the depression, the sadness, the guilt, but adding medication to that that may not be quite the answer creates an avalanche of other challenges on top of that.
So what sort of challenges do you see? Because you work a lot in this field now, don't you, with your clients?
Yes, well, probably more so recently I've really embraced to work with clients, and I'm now really channeling the path of mental health. At one particular time of my business and coaching, I wanted to help everybody, which I do in my heart always. I'd love to be able to help everybody, but it was scattering me around too much in different areas and places, and I don't think at the time I was really ready to bring my story forward and to share it. But now, and recently, I know that I've really been quite silly and you know, embarrassed to say that I had been turning my back on saying that this was my purpose. I'm here to make that difference, to be able to support and guide and teach people to be able to get through different levels of depression and anxiety, and that, you know, they are strong, resilient, beautiful, gifted, talented people with infinite potential. And unfortunately, they just don't get to see that. They get so caught up in what's happening right now, and they're not able to break that down and you know, take that time, if that mindfulness, to know what's going on, that they don't see what's in front of them, or they don't recognise who they really are.
That's a really good point that you're making there, and I'm going to encourage anybody who would like to ring in to us with some questions to please do so, and you can do that by dialing 646-716-7979. Can you just repeat that for the listeners again, Lorraine, because I think it's a really good point, because people seem to think that there is something wrong with people who are suffering with an anxiety or a depression or a mental illness, but they have huge contributions. So, you know, I particularly love the fact that you see the beauty in them and the value that they offer.
They have so much potential. They are strong, resilient people. They're full of, there's so much energy, and they have so much to give to society out there in their life, you know, be it, you know, directly in their family life, their work life, if they wish to extend that. And it's so important for them to, you know, for people to know that there are people like myself and yourself and others out there that are close by, that can help them actually connect back to who they are. One of the interesting things that I've found in research, and I won't go too much depth into it, but the shamans believe that, and this is so different to our Western society, but the shamans believe that people that have a mental illness dealt that are very, very special, gifted people. And they actually work with individuals to help them understand the messages and the clutter that and everything that's happening to them, and to know that they are okay, and there is nothing wrong. And we just in Western society, unfortunately, don't know how to embrace that for people, and hence that's where, you know, the medication comes in.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because I've spoken to I have some friends and also some colleagues who are living with bipolar, and one of the things that they constantly tell me about is how frustrating it is to go onto lithium or one of the medications, because they lose the edge. And while people might find that when they're in their hyper moments, they're rushing around and they're, you know, full of ideas, out of all of those ideas come some brilliant ideas. And to go into a place where that is numbed out to me seems incredibly unkind, and it also means that it's cutting off, again, that person's ability to live fully into their purpose. In a couple of situations, those people are actively practicing mindfulness and meditation on a daily basis. And, you know, if it's difficult for somebody for myself, for example, on a day-to-day basis to remember to practice my mindfulness, I think if you've got a mind that's really super racing, it's going to be very, very much of a challenge for a while. But like anything, it's a muscle, isn't it? It's a way of learning to do your life, a bit like cutting out sugar. It's a way of actually learning to do your life so that you're constantly bringing yourself back to that home point of stillness.
Yes, and that's true. Like, you know, research shows the absolute benefits from mindfulness and meditation. There are many famous people out there, you know, Tony Robbins, Oprah, Deepak Chopra, just so many people. They have a ritual every morning where they do that every day to be able to step into the day and be able to be the person that they'd like to be. And they've had to, you know, work at that. Originally, like all of us, we take that time. It's practice. But once you really start to see those benefits and feel those benefits, it's something that you then really would like to do. You want to do it.
Yes, exactly. And I found too that once we've done it a while, the ability to go straight there starts to happen much faster. And I've found for me personally that I can be downright dangerous in terms of all the ideas that pop up once I've had a few moments of stillness. In fact, I get all these great ideas. And then I have to really, again, use the stillness and slow everything down so that I can make a decision about which of these ideas are going to be ones that I can work with. The other thing that I found, and I don't know if you teach this with your clients, is that if there's a pause before we start a job, so that we actually have even if it's 30 seconds of stillness before we go on to the next thing, that particular task tends to take so much less time to complete. Have you noticed that?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Like when we bring ourselves back from that time of, as you said, things racing around, being anxious of what's going to happen, being in that future moment of predicting and pretty much mind reading what we think the outcome is. Once you step back and take that moment, as you said, 30 seconds to a minute to really be into and go into who you are and be still, clarity just is there. It opens up. You step into it with a rejuvenated sense of well-being and being able to accomplish what that task is that's in front of you.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I have a little chuckle to myself because I see people who set goals and create lists of things you want to do for the day. Now, I like a good list, I must say. It helps me to collect all of the many things that the programs I have going on in any one day together. But what I've learned to do is that I then look at what I right now believe to be the priorities and might mark those. I will only ever take one at a time, and I've found that, again, by practicing that little pause before getting started, the one that most needs to be done presents itself. And I do that. Then I stop, have another pause. The next one may be different to what I had thought, but it pops up and off I go. And sometimes I then find that two or three of them just vanish because I've actually tackled something which has allowed the rest to unfold. And I find that some days, if I have a lot of little things to do, then I might do 15 or 20 on my list, but I'm only ever doing one at a time.
Yes, very important. I do understand what you're saying there, Helen.
Yeah. So, Lorraine, tell us about your programs and what sort of work you're doing with people with using your mindfulness as a base.
With the programs that I have various levels of programs. There's 30-day program, 90-day program. And I look at the holistic approach of using energy healing, the NLP techniques, the mindfulness. And, of course, it's not one size fits all. And when I speak with my clients, I go through the process of understanding what's quite important to them at the moment. As you were saying with the tasks, when you focus and look on certain areas that are prominent with them, then others unfold and fall into place and that balance is created. But I'm not a coach that goes in and has a plan straight away for what's there for my client, because I believe, and this is my belief, that if I come from that space, then it becomes about me, not about them.
Mm-hmm.
And it is truly about them. So I have programs. I do a 30-minute free consultation to be able to understand what, you know, the problems are or the issues are that the person is facing at that time, and, you know, make sure that we are able to work together.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good approach too, isn't it? Because, you know, some people like the structure of a planned program. I'm also with you. I like to work with people and deal with what's presenting on what I call their desktop as it first appears. And then if it becomes evident that there is a deeper seated issue, we might then go forward and discuss that. But again, by using mindfulness, I find that we get to the heart of it much faster than we do just simply by taking a history or looking at some presenting patterns, because usually once the person is in the moment, they're able to connect straight into what it is that's causing either a health issue or a belief that's being held somewhere in the body. So, Lorraine, with your consultation, so people could, how can they contact you? How can my listeners get hold of you?
I do have a website, which is www.certitude.com.au. Mm-hmm. And there are different programs on my website. There is a contact list. Of course, my phone details are there as well, and they can contact me that way. I do
fantastic
Skype and one-on-one and so on.
Fantastic. So for listeners, again, just to repeat that, the website is www.certitudelifecoaching, certitude being spelt CERTITUDE, lifecoaching or one word .com.au, and that's so that you can actually personally connect in with Lorraine. Now, Lorraine, we've only got, you know, another 10-15 minutes, so would you like to share with us as a summary what your recommended approach to introducing mindfulness into your life might be?
My approach.
I've just completely thrown you, haven't I? Asking difficult questions.
What was that? Sorry, Helen?
I said I've just thrown you by asking a difficult question.
No, to bring it into the moment, like something that which I find helps connect to and has clients and people connect to where they are, is when they're going through a certain moment, they can feel the anxiety, they can feel the stress that's coming along. The first thing I'll have them ask is, does that belong to me or does it belong to someone else?
Okay.
And when
that's
they
a,
ask
that's
that
a really
question,
question,
that there's a shift. There's a shift in your body. Now, if that shift becomes slightly lighter, then that means the chance is it doesn't belong to you. So, therefore, I ask them to go, return to sender with love and energy, and that particular belief ends up going back to the person with love, because you don't wish to have them going through that roller coaster ride where they're on the wheel and it's hamster wheel and it's just going round and round. But then if they feel that it's heavier and it is something that they belongs to them, then take that moment then to stop and ask, where is that going? Where has that decided to sit in my body? Where is that emotion, that feeling, that thought? And then close your eyes, take that moment to then go, what is it that's in there? What is happening? How does that feel? What does it look like?
Mm-hmm. So effectively, we're actually, so for example, if I'm feeling really anxious and when I go into that spot, as you suggest, the anxiety feels really heavy. I can ask myself, well, what's happening? What's going on that's making me feel like this? And that will allow me straight away to start to connect to what's going on. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. That once you feel that and you ask, well, okay, what is it wanting to tell me? Where is it going to situate? Where is that anxiety and that feeling wanting to present itself in my body? And then take a moment to breathe that. Always be thankful and acknowledge and be thankful to yourself that you've taken the moment to do that.
Yeah, because I find that people...
That changes the energy.
It does, doesn't it? Because I find people start to bash themselves up saying, oh, I shouldn't be so anxious. As soon as I hear the word should, we're off into judgment land, and often we judge ourselves even harsher than we judge the people around us. So
yes.
What would your tips be for people who, for example, because there's a lot of people out there who are quite empathetic, so when they're in a crowd situation or where, unfortunately, family seems to bring this out amongst us, when we're in a situation where we're feeling anxious in a family environment and so forth, what would you suggest that they then do? Do they ask the same question of themselves?
I would ask them to ask the same question, but also at that moment, I would actually ask them to take a moment to step away. To actually step away, walk away, break the state of some form to then be able to take a moment to take that deep breath and go, okay, where is this? Where is this anxiety coming from? What has happened? Where is it sitting in my body? What is it trying to tell me? Because there's a difference in allowing to take on someone else's anxiety or energy that's coming into you, to yourself, than your own.
Yes, exactly. Very different, isn't it?
Very
different. So for listeners who are not used to that idea that they might be taking on somebody else's stuff, can you just give us a quick explanation of that? Because I think that's a really important thing for people to realise, that it's not always their own stuff that's causing them to feel uncomfortable.
Yes. Like, there's many people out there that wish to and do project their angers and anxiety and tensions and their energies onto us, and that's again another approach that helps with recognizing that is this really me? Is this really mine, or is that person? And being able to say, well, thank you for that experience. Thank you for if that's how you feel, but I choose not to feel that way. I choose not mm-hmm. to take that feeling on. Again, it's being mindful to be able to come back, take that breath, center yourself. In my case, going to the core, to that solar plex mm-hmm. area, and going, is this really mine?
Yeah,
because
no, it's not. Yeah. And that can be quite a good aha moment, can't it, when you suddenly realise, actually, that's not my stuff and therefore I don't need to take it on. And, in fact, in some situations, I might not even choose to continue to stay in this space.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Very much so. You know, a lot of us, we really do want to please. We want to help. But, unfortunately, in many times that we do that, we blur our boundaries. And we need to be able to bring our boundaries back, bring our boundaries and be able to say, hey, that is yours. And I respect and I understand that is yours and that's okay, but this is where I choose to be.
And that's also an interesting one. We probably aren't going to have time today to explore in great detail the whole issue of the children that are coming through the schools at the moment who may or may not be diagnosed with ADHD but are certainly hyperactive because often they don't have a good sense of boundaries, do they? And again, I've found that by teaching them how to be in the moment, it does help them to get some sense of at least their own personal boundary.
I agree, definitely. It's very important for children to understand, because children are so open and giving, really. They're like a sponge, and they do absorb what's happening, you know, in our parents' life, in our school life. Something that I used to always say to my children when they were going to school, they'd come home to me and they'd go, oh, you know, such and such was really mean today, they didn't like me, you know, something was happening. And I'd always say to them, please take a moment to understand that you have no idea where they or what has happened to them in the morning before they went to school and was there with you. That child could be going through something that you have no idea about, so just be there to say hi. Can I help you? If they don't want to, that's okay. That's okay to do that. But don't take it on board that, oh, they don't like me or this is happening, because that's probably not the case. It's something that is happening in their life, in their family environment, and they just don't know how to be able to work with that and function with that when they get to school. So they end up, you know, taking it out on everyone else.
Yeah, it's very much the case, and I think particularly in homes where either the parents have their own issues that they're dealing with which are stressing them out, or whether they're choosing to self-medicate in one way or the other, but also for children just coming to terms with, you know, for some of them going to school is a dream come true, and for others they have their own issues around their ability to learn or the purpose of learning and so forth. So with all that sort of stuff also goes on. And I was actually fortunate enough to talk with some women recently who are running a mindfulness program in a local primary school. And it was just fantastic to hear about their success stories there, where they've actually been able to get really, really hyperactive children turning up to school on a regular basis and also participating in class. And they've been doing that by filling up drink bottles with that lava flow stuff. I can't think of what it's actually called, but we'll call it stuff. They glue the lids on so that they can't actually pull them apart. And they have a session of playtime where they race around with these bottles and shake them as hard as they can. And then they have a some time on the floor where they lay down with their hands on their head on their hands and watch the lava flow as it settles in the bottle. And that was another way, a visual way, a beautiful visual way of actually bringing people into the present moment, because as they're watching the beautiful colours settling into the bottom of their bottle, it's actually bringing them into that regulated breathing and also into a place where they, for the duration of that time, are actually being in the moment. And I thought that was a fantastic way of teaching children how to enjoy that and also understand that the personal power that they then get from being in the moment, because they can also start to tap into the feeling that they're okay. Isn't it?
Awesome to be able to bring that into the school.
Yes. So it's a topic I think that we're going to have to get you back again, Lorraine, because I think it's a topic that we can explore in many different ways, and I will be over the coming weeks. So to summarise,
I'd love to.
That's fantastic. So to summarise, what would you say are your three top loves about mindfulness?
Oh, top loves about mindfulness. One is inner peace.
Mm-hmm.
And getting to that, what I would call bliss, true bliss of contentment, peace, clarity, knowing who I am. You know, I'm listing more than three. I'm listing many. Mindfulness is such a powerful tool that can change so much about your life and your health and your mind, and I love that. It's a free tool, so to speak. It's what mm-hmm. is part of us anyway, and we don't utilize it the best way that we can.
Thank you for that. So just would you like to give the listeners one more time the way that they can find you?
The listeners, if they would like to contact me, and they can contact me via my website, which is certitude Life Coaching, and certitude is mm-hmm. certitude, lifecoaching.com.au. Very happy to be able to speak with anyone that would like to get in contact. As I said, I have a 30-minute, it's a 30 to 45-minute free consultation session with just talking to someone and being able to see how that, you know, we can help them get through whatever those challenges are in their life.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Listeners, it's been really fantastic to be talking to you about mindfulness and how we can bring ourselves into the present moment. I'm Helen Ryan from Mind Your Feet, and I'm pleased to announce that by the time I speak to you in the next fortnight, we should have a book called Mind Your Feet to come join us. So I'd encourage everybody to investigate their own form of mindfulness. If nothing else, just be aware that your cat or your dog is always in the present moment, which is why they're always in their own state of bliss. So I'm Helen Ryan. You can find me at helenryan.com on Facebook, or you can find me at www.helenryan.com.au. And thank you, everybody, for a fantastic session. And Lorraine, thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you, Helen, for inviting me. It's been a great pleasure to be able to discuss this topic with you. Thank you. And thank you to the listeners.
Thanks, Lorraine. Okay, so I think that's going to wrap us up for now. So I'm going to say goodbye until next time. And everybody, I would like you to mind your feet.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.